Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very warm welcome to DW's Africa Link this Friday, the 20th of April. I'm Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Lovely to have you on board. We're also streaming live on Facebook, DW Africa. If you're already there, give us a like. Coming up on the show, South Sudan mourns its army chief. But will his death affect in any way the ongoing peace process?
I don't think it is going to create a much gap because we have seen a continuous changes in that position. The president has been changing that people in that position for a long time, changed chief of staff several times.
And a new study suggests that the EU is cooperating with dubious African leaders to stem the flow of migrants.
Right now, there's huge expectations on the EU side to deliver fast. So we want to see numbers drop. But this is rather short-sighted. We need long-term solutions, and that means partnerships where African countries also really see a benefit.
Well, these are some of the stories that we've lined up for you. But first, here's a chance to listen to what has been happening around the world.
I'm Eunice Wanjiru with DW News. Britain's Prime Minister Theresa May hosted the final day of the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting on Friday at Windsor Castle on the invitation of Britain's Queen Elizabeth. Leaders of the 53 Commonwealth nations agreed that Prince Charles should succeed the Queen as the next head of the British-led organisation. May hopes to win the support of the Commonwealth for future trade deals and bolster her argument that the future is bright after Brexit.
Now, we have a number of specific decisions to take today, together with a broader conversation about the common future for the Commonwealth that we all want to see. I'm sure today will be a memorable occasion for all of us, and by the end of which I'm sure we'll be able to leave even closer friends and with a unique understanding of each other in ways which cannot be matched by other summits.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa left the Commonwealth Summit early to respond to the turmoil in the northwest capital of Mahikeng. Residents brought life to a standstill with protest over alleged corruption and calls for the premier to resign. Ramaphosa's visit to the city is seen as the most significant test of his public peacemaking skills since he took office in February. Two Palestinians were killed by Israeli troops firing across the Gaza Strip's border, health officials said on Friday, as hundreds of Palestinians flocked to the frontier for the fourth weekly protest. The protesters burned tires along the border with Israel or flew kites with flaming rags dangling from their tails. Gaza's health ministry says 83 Palestinians have been injured in protests on the Gaza-Israel border, including 26 who were wounded by Israeli army fire. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. The Turkish parliament voted with an overwhelming majority on Friday to hold snap elections, expected to take place on June 24th. The state-run Anadolu news agency said 386 members of the House out of 550 voted in favour of a motion for early parliamentary and presidential elections, which will take place more than a year ahead of schedule and during the ongoing state of emergency. Syrian military media have released a video of what they say is an ongoing offensive against a zone in Damascus held by the so-called Islamic State group. The push started on Thursday evening after a deal between the government and the militants appeared to have failed. And finally, in sports news, British Premier League club Arsenal announced that manager Arsene Wenger will be stepping down and leaving the club at the end of the season. The 68-year-old won three Premier League titles and a record 7 FA Cups during his reign of almost 22 years at Arsenal. But recent seasons have seen rising discontent among the fans as the club failed to maintain its competitive momentum. Among the names being mentioned as a possible successor is German national coach Joachim Löw. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
You're listening to DW's Africa Link program with me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And my name is Jane Nyinge. Thank you so much for joining us live on air and on Facebook. Also, feel free to take part in the program by sharing your thoughts and opinions on the stories we are covering. Now, South Sudan is mourning the death of its army chief in a development that could further complicate the running of President Salva Kiir's administration amid a four-year-old civil war. General James Ajongo died in Egypt after a short illness at the age of 64.
Now, his death comes at a time when civil society organizations in South Sudan have urged the African Union to lobby for inclusion of the five IGAD members, Nigeria, South Africa, Chad, Algeria, and Rwanda, to support the regional IGAD-led talks in implementing peace in the country. Wakye Simon Wudu with more on the report.
It is with great sorrow and heavy heart that I announce the untimely death of General James Ajongo Mawud, the Sudan People's Liberation Army Chief of Defense Forces.
That is Information Minister Michael Makwei announcing to the press Ajongo's death this morning. The government has declared a 3 days official mourning period starting today and ordered all South Sudanese flags to be flown at half-mast in honor of the departed general.
General James Ajongo Mawud was a remarkable man who was a committed founding member of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement and Army. He served this nation with dedication and honor and shall be remembered as a hero.
The death of Ajongo comes amid shaky peace efforts in which regional mediators and international partners are engaging both government and opposition groups to strike a long-lasting deal. Some observers, like Omara Joseph, a policy analyst with the Advocates for Human Rights and Democracy, think the general's death won't affect the current situation in the country because he didn't have much influence both in political and military affairs.
I don't think it is going to create a much gap because we have seen continuous changes in that position. The president has been changing that people in that position for a long time, changed chief of staff several times, so much impact is not going to be felt as we expect. The chief of staff himself was actually somebody who was quite formidable. He knew actually what he was doing.
Binto Keita, the United Nations Assistant Secretary General for Peacekeeping Operations, while wrapping her four-day visit to South Sudan, said she is appalled by the ongoing violence which continues to affect especially women and children. She called for South Sudanese leaders to give peace a chance.
Think about the country beyond your individual interest. Give peace a chance. Give your children a chance. Every opportunity for peace, every chance to save lives has to be seized.
Ajongo is a founding member of the SPLA since 1984 and was appointed last year in May as the country's chief of defense forces after President Kiir fell apart with the former chief of staff, Paul Malong, now rebel turned.
Wakye Simon Wudu for us there in Juba, South Sudan. Moving on, Britain has said that it will strongly support the Zimbabwean return to the Commonwealth. The announcement came after Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson met with his Zimbabwean counterpart, Sibusiso Moyo, at the Commonwealth Heads of Government meeting in London. Despite the announcement, Zimbabwe readmission will have to wait until the next summit, which will be held in 2 years' time. Zimbabwe left the organization 15 years ago after the then former President Robert Mugabe was criticized over disputed elections and bad leadership.
Meanwhile, the Commonwealth nations have agreed that Prince Charles will succeed his mother, Queen Elizabeth II, as the next head of British-led organization. The decision is yet to be confirmed officially. The Prime Minister, who was in attendance, also said she hopes to win the support of the Commonwealth for future trade deals. Here is her voice.
And I'm so struck by the number of heads we have assembled here today. I think that's a powerful demonstration of our commitment to revitalise the Commonwealth and to tap into its vast potential. And I think that vast potential has been clear throughout this week.
British Prime Minister Theresa May commenting on the Commonwealth organisation.
And Jane, we've got lots of reactions concerning that story. And Ken from Nairobi, Kenya, says for as long as Commonwealth keeps focusing on business and trade, it will remain useful. But if it uses a lot of its energy on politics and democracy, it will be rendered obsolete.
Ken was actually reacting to a question that we posted on our Facebook page, asking you, our listeners, whether or not this organization was still relevant. You can still join the conversation there. And Joe from the USA says it has its merit, so I think it should be overhauled.
And we have another user from Cameroon. He's not left his name. He says, Commonwealth serve no common interest. British, Southern Cameroonians are suffering and the Commonwealth has done nothing.
And one quick one from John Neighbor from Germany. He says, I do not think so. They are bundles of thieves sitting together to develop strategies to exploit poorer nations.
So keep those comments coming on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Now, a new study suggests that the EU is increasingly cooperating with dubious African leaders in its effort to stem the flow of migrants. Until just a few years ago, EU financial assistance was conditional. Those who uphold democracy and the rule of law got the money. Today, these priorities have shifted in favor of states that fake or they take migrants off Europe's hands, according to a latest report released by the German Institute for Security and International Affairs. I spoke to one of the researchers, David Kipp, and he starts by telling us the African governments involved in this dubious business.
Well, in the study itself, we didn't refer to dubious countries itself, but our criteria for selecting countries we looked at was that they had to be authoritarian or semi-authoritarian ruled states, and those countries were Algeria, Morocco, Niger, Sudan, Eritrea, and Egypt.
And when did your organization learn about this dubious business?
Well, there was growing interest in the last years with regards to the migration partnerships with Africa. And we wanted to understand better what kind of dynamics those partnerships actually have on the African side. So my side was to look at the EU interests and how they are implemented in projects in various African contexts. And my colleagues looked more at the African interests. So together we identified some patterns in the different country contexts.
Your study suggests that instead of its current preoccupation with reducing migrants' numbers, the EU should focus on the causes of migration. How can this be done?
I think we need a much longer time frame for this whole cooperation. Right now, there's huge expectations on the EU side to deliver fast. So we want to see numbers drop. But this is rather short-sighted. We need long-term solutions. And that means partnerships where African countries also really see a benefit. And you can't just try to control migration. You also need to improve free movement of people, because this is really important in the African context. And I think reducing forced and irregular movement is the right thing to do, but you also have to increase voluntary, regular movement in the same time.
That was David Kipp, a researcher at the German Institute of Security and International Affairs, reacting to a new study that suggests that the EU is increasingly cooperating with the dubious African leaders in its effort to stem the flow of migrants.
Interesting comments there about
Absolutely.
That one. And actually, just still related to that, let's have a quick look on that Commonwealth story there. And Charles Ongole from Uganda says the Commonwealth is an essential body and it should continue because it has practical reasons to do that.
And a quick one here from Nemba, who is in Germany. He says, I don't think so. These are bundles of thieves sitting together to develop strategies and to exploit poorer nations.
Interesting. It's been quite a while and this debate is still going on. We do encourage you certainly to continue contributing just by checking on our Facebook page, DW Africa, and keep those comments coming.
If you're just joining us, welcome to the program. My name is Jen Nyinge.
With me, Jen Ayeko-Kumet. Now, in this part of Africa Link, we shall talk about female bloggers in Zambia, get a chance to learn more about African history in our series of African Roots, and of course, some sports.
And remember, Africa Link is also live on Facebook via DW Africa. Check it. Check us out and join the debate on the stories we are covering.
Social media has grown tremendously in the past few years. The way technology is growing is so obvious that more and more people are going to grasp its benefits. This is exactly what female bloggers in Zambia have done. They have ventured into blogging about topics rarely covered in traditional media. Kathy Short met some of them and sent us this report.
So when we started Fashion Blogging, we just wanted to document fashionable Zambians. And at the time, we just figured, these people look really nice. I wonder if anyone has told them. Let's walk up to them. Let's tell them. Let's take a picture. And we would put it up on our little blog. And we didn't realize we were really fashion blogging. And then when we were told that, oh, actually, this is called a blog. This is a fashion blog, and they're getting popular around the world. We were like, oh, okay, I guess we're fashion bloggers then.
Telling a different narrative, especially about Zambia and about Africa.
Well, we hope to do a lot more content, I'm going to say, that comes directly from our brains. That sounds a bit weird, but we've been working a lot with corporate clients, which we love, because it's helped to build us and to push us and to give us, I guess, the capital to do the other things we love to do. But this year we hope to create content that is all our own, that is just Mafasho.
That is Sekai and Tukia Fundanga. The two sisters run Mafasho, a blog dedicated to fashion. Sandy Chimpala is another blogger who has ventured into a rare topic, technology. Through her blog, Tech Trends Technology, the multi-award winner young lady keeps Zambians abreast with the latest in the world of technology.
At first, you get some doubts from people. It's like, should we really trust this stuff? It's a girl writing, what does she know type thing. But eventually, because of consistency, I think a lot of people started understanding that, yes, she has something to say. She's got space. She's a thought leader in this space. So I think I earned some respect at that point. We try to go beyond the news. There's always press releases. There's always these news items coming out. But most media houses don't really go behind the why. Why should, you know, like, what's the reason for this move? Or why do we need this new technology? So basically that actually helped to keep our blog running, because we have to answer those questions that nobody else is answering.
Just like Chimpala, Brenda Zulu founded the African New Media Group. It specializes in delivering Web 2.0 services to its clients and also offers media consultancy. She has interests in the effective use of social media by media organizations, civil society, and other parties, blogging, microblogging, computer, and internet access in rural areas, among others. Zulu has been blogging for more than 15 years now.
So we came together to form this network so that we could help each other where all of us have got gaps. We have done a few projects, for instance, a project which we did with the British Council, where we were helping the NGOs to have their own spaces where they can be publishing their press releases and any other things that the NGOs and the CSOs need to publish online.
A report by Kathy Short in Zambia. Now, do not forget to check out our Facebook page, DW Africa. There's quite a lot that we are covering in there compared to what you are listening to now. Do join the conversation and we shall keep it going here in Africa Link.
DW African Roots.
Well, Kinje Kitile Ngwale is a controversial figure in Africa's history. In the beginning of the 20th century, he encouraged people living in what is now known as Tanzania to rise up against the guns of German colonizers, promising them protection with the sacred liquid. Some see Kinje Kitile as a hero who gave his people hope and courage. Others consider him as a fraudster who led many of his people to their death. James Muhando looked into his life, and his report is now presented by Emma Wallace.
A long time ago, a man is said to have disappeared into a lake and stayed underwater for 24 hours. The legend goes that his clothes were dry when he emerged. In his hands, he carried water that he said was magic and would turn bullets into liquid. The man's name was Kinjeketile Ngware, and this is his story.
By 1898, German colonizers had invaded most of Tanzania, then known as Tanganyika. They established a brutal regime of forced labor and heavy taxation. Local people suffered. In 1904, they gained new hope as a prophet emerged, Kinjeketile. He claimed to have been possessed by a snake, saying the spirit had given him maji, a sacred potion of millet and water which would repel the Germans' bullets. People believed him. Armed with spears and doused with maji water, the first warriors of what would become known as the Maji Maji Rebellion began to fight against the Germans, explains Professor Bertram Mapunda from the University of Dar es Salaam.
Wakati wanaanza vuguvugu hizo za vita,
when the preparations for the rebellion picked up speed, the Germans had already heard of strange things that involved traditional healers handing out a special brew to the people. When asked, the healers lied to them, saying it was to keep wild animals like pig away from their fields.
After rebels attacked a local German official, Kinjeketile was hanged for treason. And although his magic Maji water failed to protect his followers from German guns, the seeds of rebellion spread, eventually involving 20 different ethnic groups who fought for another 2 years. According to Professor Mapunda, the seed of hope and faith that Kinjeketile had planted survived.
Had he not provided them with that faith, they would not have fought. If they hadn't fought, why? We wouldn't be talking about the Maji Maji Rebellion today, which is among the most important African wars against colonialism.
An estimated 180,000 to 300,000 people died as a result of the counteroffensive by the Germans, who also destroyed crops, causing widespread famine. Although the Germans weren't defeated, the uprising forced them to introduce important reforms. Professor Mapunda explains how differently Kinjeketile is remembered today.
We have to understand that when you give someone the psychological ability, when you build their faith, they fight with vigor. In my opinion, Kinjeketile was a hero.
Hero or not, Kinjeketile is an important figure in Tanzania's history. Julius Nyerere, the first president of independent Tanganyika, considered the Maji Maji revolt the start of his country's fight for liberation, which it finally achieved in 1961.
That report was compiled by James Muhando and presented by Emma Wallis.
We have quite a number of those reports. If you're interested, and of course it's not a matter of interest, if you like African history and you'd like to learn more, check out our Facebook page, but also visit our online dwafrica.com.
Jane, now, before you get to sports, can I acknowledge a few people who are live on Facebook? We have Robert Akitemi, and we have Keba M. Torale, and we have also Mark Sise, and he's listening from Essen here in Germany.
Yeah, but I would like to take our listeners to something else that we've been covering before we switch our mood to sports. We've just been talking about an African historian and talking about African leaders. The king of Swaziland, King Mswati, has decided, or rather announced, he wants to change the name of his country from Swaziland to Eswatini, the land of the Swazis. His reason? Swaziland carries a colonial name and it's often confused with Switzerland. And we did ask you to share your opinion with us.
And Vincent Wamazembe says he has spiced up the name. Brilliant dude. Kudos.
Yes, kudos from Vincent there. And Juma Mwakwatmwatu says there is sense in it. I meet people every day who think I'm talking about Switzerland when I'm actually talking about Swaziland. Or some query. You mean the African one or European one?
An interesting one there.
Yes, and Baye Jeremiah also says there is a reasonable amount of sense in his submission. I wish him well, but they should make sure the spirit of the whole nation is behind the change of the name. Okay.
Please tell us what you think wherever you are. Just head on our Facebook page, DW Africa.
There's always a lot to learn there. Now, in the sporting world, it's now official that Arsenal's Arsene Wenger will step down after serving the club for over two decades. Now, I asked our sports editor, Chuck Penfold, if this comes as a surprise. Take a listen.
The moment when it comes, it's always, of course, a bit of a surprise. But I think that he stepped down after this season isn't so much. He's had 22 years, generally successful years at Arsenal. In the last few years, not so much. One of the big things he did was helping, keep the team going when they built the new stadium and sort of took them to another level. They've won a few FA Cups with him. They've won titles. They had the one season where they were undefeated. So he's achieved a lot, but not so much in the last few years. There's been a lot of complaints from Arsenal fans over the past two or three seasons, a lot saying sort of his time has passed and he should be going. He's 68 years old, I believe, so it's probably his time for him to hit the rocking chair, I guess, in a way, take it a little easier. One shouldn't underestimate his impact on the English Premier League. I mean, a lot of people credit him with changing the way the game's played and also changing the way British players train, the way they look after themselves in terms of nutrition, and revolutionized the game in England. But it's the end of an era in that club.
Yes, end of an era. Let's come back here in Germany to Bundesliga. We already know that Bayern has again taken the lead. But apart from that, what else is happening?
The league is still interesting. I know a lot of people are, complaining that the league's not interesting because we know who the title winner is. It's not that way at all. There's a great battle going on for the remaining three spots that the Bundesliga gets in the Champions League next season. Also the battle for the teams that will go in the Europa League. And, of course, the battle against relegation. A couple of key games going on this weekend in terms of the battle for Europe. Leipzig-Hoffenheim there in fifth and sixth. Both of them still have a chance at getting to the Champions League. It will be difficult, but they've still got a chance, so they're fighting over that. So that's a big game. Also, Bayer Leverkusen are taking on Dortmund. That's a third against fourth. They're both level on 51 points and not quite safe in the Champions League yet, so a lot riding on those. And then towards the bottom of the table, of course, we've got poor old Hamburg that look like they may be relegated for the first time in their history. They've got a true relegation battle at home against Freiburg. Freiburg are 16th above Hamburg by 8 points, but 16th is the place where they could save themselves.
We keep an eye on that one, but let's talk about Leipzig. From the second position last year to the fifth place this season, where is RB heading to?
I think they're probably going to go into Europe. They're at 47 points. 46 have both Hoffenheim and Frankfurt. Frankfurt would be out of Europe at this point, the way it stands. But I think they will get into Europe. They could still get into the Champions League by getting up to fourth. Maybe a bit of a long shot. I think they still have a shot at getting into the Champions League, but they should be at least in the Europa League next season.
DW's sports editor, Chuck Penfold. And he started off with an update on what is happening with Arsenal. And Arsene Wenger, of course, leaving the club that he served for over two decades. Now, we asked you, Arsenal fans, is this devastating news or is it rather a welcome one or simply too late? And you have certainly been sharing your comments and we are pleased to present them.
Okemwa Onyembo says it's mixed feelings. We regret his choices and decisions in recent seasons, but I so think he should have done this last season.
Those are his comments. Satan Jack says it's time to celebrate this good news from Wenger.
And another user from Nigeria, we don't have his name, he says, I've been teamless. Jane, are you teamless for the past 5 years?
No, I certainly have teams that I support, but I keep them to myself. Yeah, okay. But another one from Cameroon, also without a name, says, this is really devastating news. We will miss him.
And Risto Ashipala, he is in Namibia, says, everything in life has a beginning and an end. I'm a royalty Arsenal fan, and all I have to say is one of the greatest coach for the European football club's history and also in the world.
I think that's a good one.
Absolutely.
I'll just get one quick one from Razak in Ghana, who says Arsenal Wenger has paid his dues to Arsenal in particular and football in general. I will miss him.
I'm sure he will be missed by
the bigger
many.
Fraternity. But I think he
exactly,
will keep
Exactly, especially
around.
In Africa, because Arsenal as a team is very popular in Africa.
Yes. Thank you so much for having time with us. That's all we had for. And from me, Jane Ayeko Kumet.
And me, Jen Nyinge. Bye for now.
Bye.